Hello and welcome to today's episode of A Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
All right, Jonathan, this has been a little bit of an exhausting week. We have the two Rainer on Leadership podcasts, and now we've also begun another podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Revitalize and Replant.
With Tom Rainer,
of course. And we're doing two a week of those for a season, for a short season, mm-hmm. for a while. And so we're on a pace right now where we're doing four of these a week, and we'll get back to three a week. But I want to make certain that I invite all of our listeners to that podcast Thursdays.
Yes, Thursdays.
And release time is
in the morning, just like these.
Mm-hmm. So the topics are obviously church revitalization and church replanting, which includes acquisition, church death, yep. church sickness,
mergers, those kind of, all kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff going on. And always thankful for Midwestern Seminary for providing us the sponsorship so that we're able to get this information out to our listeners.
Midwestern helps students get to the field faster, and they're serious about training leaders for the church. That's why they've created the all-new Accelerate program. In Midwestern's Accelerate program, students earn both Bachelor's of Arts degrees and Master of Divinity degrees in just 5 years of intensive study. That's a BA and an MDiv at the same time. This innovative residential program combines rigorous academic training with practical ministry preparation, resulting in one of the most effective programs around. That's 2 degrees in 5 years, all in one program, so you can pursue your ministry calling as soon as possible. You can find out more and take the next step by visiting mbts.edu/accelerate.
Hey, before we get into the content, the great content yeah. that's been provided by Lifeway Research here, do you realize what's about to happen? We are 30 days from a relocation.
Yeah.
So we have been doing the podcast in my office for a long time.
We're going to have a studio.
We are going to have a podcast studio in the new Lifeway building.
I had totally, like, I hadn't even registered with me. November 13th, first day, team first day right here. Team first day is, I'm not going to go to the building until the first day.
There you go.
I'm going to. I know y'all, all three of y'all around the table have been over, but I'm holding out.
Oh, you haven't been at all.
Mm.
Well, the two Amys have been a lot more than I have. I've been once.
Oh.
I mean.
And you Facebook lived it too. They're really cool.
You did?
No, you did.
Oh, I did. Oh, yes. I did. Oh, yeah.
You remember that? Really cool.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did. No, the two Amys go like once, twice a day over there.
She bought her own steel-toed heels.
Oh, wow.
Amy did. Because she's been over there so much.
Building's looking great. But just to let our podcast listeners know, the Lifeway headquarters will be relocated, and we'll be in a podcast studio, and we'll have to do a Facebook Live from the new podcast studio.
Yeah. And we've got it built in. That'll be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because we got the built-in cameras and screens and all that.
If any of our listeners have ever been on Facebook Live, and we have done a few of those Facebook Live podcasts, and they see this metal tray that you push around.
I like my metal tray.
I think this is circa 1963 Lifeway. It's been around for a long. And, you know, I'm looking at it right now. And what do you call those things right there?
The label,
but it had a name to it because I used to have one of those guns where you squinch the things.
Yeah, it's from a label gun. I mean, yeah, I don't.
But there was a name for it. I mean, I had one of those when I was a child. So you talk about...
That is old.
That is really old.
They had that technology back in the 1800s.
It was not technology. It was just squeeze something onto plastic. We'll have to find out exactly what that is. But anyway, we'll be moving. I want to get to the content of the financial realities facing churches. And we're going to talk about some solutions to this as we talk about the problems as well.
All right. So this data comes from Lifeway Research and a recent release that they had on financial realities that are facing churches. And we're going to talk about three main points. First one is the need for cash reserves.
Yeah, you think about what the financial experts say for personal financial reserves. And depending upon to whom you are listening, it's anywhere from 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, three to 6 months salary.
Yeah.
And a lot of them advocate for, you know, a rainy day fund, like an emergency fund of like $1,000 or something.
Something of that. And yet only 1/4, well, to be exact, 26% of the churches say that they have cash reserves of 7 weeks or less.
That's not 3 months.
That's not 3 months. And think about this, Jonathan. Think about all the churches that have gone through all the hurricane damage, Houston, Florida,
wow,
other places,
yes.
and the fact that many of them are not meeting for a season in any way for some season. And even though people continue to give online and other ways, giving drops dramatically during that time.
It does.
Most churches do not anticipate that they are going to need cash reserves to the extent of some type of tragic issue like a hurricane. But then again, I'm thinking about what Amy T does on a regular basis. Amy T fills calls from churches that have had their church buildings burned down, and they cannot meet for a season. There can always be reasons where you have an urgent need for a lot of cash, but it's not just an urgent need for a lot of cash. You can go through a season where things are tough financially, but not necessarily dramatically down, and you need cash reserves for that. 26% of churches have cash reserves for 7 weeks or less. That's not enough. And I know what many church leaders are thinking. Our budget is tight as it is. You know what I advocate on this? I want to talk about solution. Advocate you put in your budget a budget line for cash reserves.
Hmm.
And so,
because if you make it intentional, that's
it's like those who give faithfully.
They budget their tithe,
and it just comes out of it. Or if you have some type of expense deducted from your account on a regular basis, it just comes out. I recommend to churches that they have some amount in their budget, and they make sure it's a part of their budget, and that means they can't do other things. And make that be part of your cash reserve. So, solution to the problem.
Now, when we talked with Tim Cool about facilities, he talked about a reserve facility fund. This is not that.
No, this is non. That would be designated.
That's a capital.
But I would have both.
You need both. Yeah.
A facility fund is going to, when that air condition unit breaks down, the facility fund is there to replace it. Most churches do not think about the issue of replacement of capital items or maintenance of capital items. And we have in the show notes information from Tim Cool and Cool Solutions. I tell you, he provides a service that pays for itself.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You go through his facility audit or you go to Cool Solutions, and again, that can help you in the future along with your cash reserve. So it's both and. It's not either or, it's both and.
All right, I'm looking at some breakdowns of this data for the cash reserves. Mainline pastors are the most likely to select 52 weeks. 30% of mainline pastors said they had 52-plus weeks of cash reserves. Only 18% of evangelical pastors selected that. So mainlines seem to have a little bit more in the cash reserves. And I think we've talked about that in the past because of endowments.
Well, that's exactly it. Mainline churches, even though I am part of the evangelical church, I have to give it to a lot of mainline churches because they have learned the whole system of endowment and making certain that many of their church members remember the church and their wills. Many of the evangelical churches kind of live for the day financially and don't plan for the future. And so they do not have this systemic way of making certain that people remember them upon their death or that they have some system in place to donate to the church beyond regular giving. So I think that is the reason that more mainline churches have those funds than evangelical churches.
Another need for cash reserves relates to the second point, and that's the potential for embezzlement in churches.
The two greatest dangers of churches today in terms of legal problems. Number one is alleged child abuse. We have covered that in more than one case, sexual abuse, other kinds of child abuse taking place in the church. And you and I know this in terms of there's a church in the Nashville area that's going through this from a lawsuit. In fact, there are a couple of them right now. We hear it all the time. So that is one of those key areas. And I think the awareness of this has been raised and we have a heightened awareness of that issue. But I do not think we have a heightened awareness of the issue of potential embezzlement. Right now, you could say, well, it's only 1 out of 10 churches have had someone
that's embezzled. That's one too many, I will say.
Well, that's 10% too many, too. 1 out of 10 churches actually is 9% in the study. So it's right at 1 out of 10. But here's a couple of things that are happening. That number, I will project, will be growing, Jonathan. And there are reasons for that.
Right. So tell me why.
The primary reason is more people are learning how to scam churches. And more people are learning how to get into the system.
Hmm.
And it is, churches have great vulnerability because we have so much trust. and more people are taking advantage of that trust. One of the ways that they've done it in the past is the scam artists who will come and say, I don't have food or clothing. I'm not suggesting if someone comes to your church, you don't give them food or clothing, but I can say there's been a whole system of scam artists that have been,
that have gone that path.
Now they're beginning to learn they can get inside the church and that there are easy ways to embezzle funds. One of the easiest ways to embezzle funds is take up the offering and nobody's going to miss the cash or at least a portion of the cash.
Yeah.
That one I don't think is even being measured when we look at the 9%.
There's no telling how many that, but there are checks and balances you need on that.
That certainly are. You have two people taking up the offering.
At least two. And you
have different, you never leave the offering alone with one person, those type of things. But we're not talking about that. We are talking about systems in place that are inadequate for check writing, for invoices, for all of the financial systems within the church. This will be a growing area. And there are two things that are happening. We have less attention and less expertise in this area, and that means conversely we have greater vulnerability. One of the organizations that we have a close relationship with is Belay.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when we have thought about Belay at Lifeway, we've thought about EAs, executive assistants, and we have several that we have gotten from Belay. But Belay also has bookkeepers, virtual bookkeepers. And one of the reasons I like that is that takes the responsibility away from the inside, not the offering taking, but the bookkeeping function of it, and it puts it to an organization that has all the protections in place. So I can see more and more churches, not only from a personnel point of view, but just from a pure safety and prudence point of view, going to virtual bookkeepers, and that's one of the reasons that I advocate Belay. So we've given the problem, and that's one of the solutions.
See, I think a lot of times we think that the more people that are involved in the money workings of a mm-hmm. church, the less secure it is because you got more hands in the pot.
Not necessarily.
But it seems like it's the opposite.
Yeah. So it especially at the level of invoicing and writing checks and some things of that nature, more hands in the till can actually have more problems. And so if you put more and more of it on the outside, external,
yeah,
in terms of Belay or a similar organization, you will have more safeguards in place. And here's the good thing about it is an organization virtual like Belay is just able to do so at a very affordable price too. So it's stewardship issues and it's helping on the legal liability side as well.
And it's procedural, I'm thinking.
That's right.
It seems like there's a lot of potential for using church credit cards for personal use or, not really good invoicing and adding on to things, cash, petty cash reimbursements, those kind of things. That seems to be the places that are, I guess, most vulnerable.
Right.
And moving that outside and having a system that, and accounting procedures that are followed and are mandatory because you're using a third party kind of cleans up a lot of that gray area.
All right, let's go back to the first time you had let's do the virtual assistant, then we're going to come back to the virtual bookkeeper.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the first time you had a virtual assistant from Belay. What's one of the first things you told me?
That I'm more efficient in what I do because I have to make sure I stay on task so she stays on task.
Okay. So you started working more on your calendar. You started working more on your task list. You started working more on making certain you were communicating mm-hmm. well. All of those things were in place because you had this other party doing so. Same principle for bookkeeping is exactly what you're saying. You make sure that the processes are working well. Because Belay cannot function or this virtual bookkeeper cannot function unless the processes are checked off and doing well. So it is a great protection and is a way that I think this is a wave, two waves of the future here, Jonathan. One wave of the future is that 1 out of 10 of churches that have had embezzlement. Sadly, I am going to project that number will increase because of vulnerabilities and trust, both vulnerabilities and trust. Secondly, I'm going to project that more and more churches will go virtual on this function just because it is the wise stewardship and it is a wise protective measure as well.
One point to drill down on the data here, the question, has anyone ever embezzled funds from your current church? Church of Christ, 16% of Church of Christ respondents said yes. twice as much as Baptist or Presbyterian or Reformed, which are like 7 and 6% respectively.
I don't know.
So denominationally, I don't know why that would be.
I don't know. I do not either. So it's fascinating, but I don't know the why behind it. I don't know if it has something to do with polity that could cause some type of rate. I simply don't know. Fascinating information, but I don't have the answer to that one.
We mentioned procedures for finances. That kind of plays into the third point here, and that's the need for an annual audit. Only 47% of Protestant pastors say that their church has been audited within the past year. However, you're pushing back a little bit against that data.
Oh,
not against this data, not against Life of Research. You have bad data.
I have no doubt that 47% of the respondents
said
their church has a complete financial audit within a year.
They just don't know what complete financial audit means.
Yeah, exactly. The assumption is with many leaders in churches today, it's particularly because so many of them do not have business backgrounds, is that a financial audit means we turn our numbers over to a CPA or a bookkeeper or someone of that nature, and he or she puts the numbers together. That is not an audit. That is just a compilation of numbers. That's bookkeeping. Most churches, very few churches, let me put it in the opposite way, very few churches have an audit. Jonathan, an audit tests the numbers. So, for example, they would see an invoice that got paid. They would do some samples. They would call up some of these people and say, is this the actual amount you got paid? We want to make sure that there was no impropriety.
That's what
there.
Goes on into an audit? I had no idea what goes into audit.
Audit is testing the numbers.
Okay.
Most of the time, we're just compiling the numbers. So an audit is extremely unusual in churches. Now, should all churches have audits? Nah, they're pretty expensive.
Yeah.
They because you're going way past the compilation of numbers, they can be pretty expensive. But I don't want you to think that you're having an audit if you're not having an audit.
What budget level would you say requires an audit? Like if you have a budget over what?
In the millions.
It depends?
Okay. Well, it depends, but... Again,
I'm thinking if you're $1-2 million and you're bringing in $40,000 a week, and you can find the money, I think, to do an audit, $2 million budget.
Yeah, I don't know what the cost would be, but it's so much more expensive than just any turning it over to a CPA and they're putting their numbers together. Let me give you an example. When I do my taxes at the year end, what I do with my taxes, my CPA sends me a checklist and says, give me this, give me this. And I put it all together, send it to them digitally. If I need to send them any documentation, I'll put that in the mail. That's a compilation. He's not saying, did you actually receive this money? Did you really pay out this? He may say, give me all your charitable deduction receipts that you got, but he's not checking in an audit situation. That's what's happening in churches most of the time. They're sending the information in for compilations. I would say that if a church has a budget of $5 million or more, that's pretty big, it definitely should have an audit. Then it becomes a gray area in the $1-5 million. It really can become cost prohibitive.
Okay.
So those are off the cuff, not official Rainerisms.
All right. So say your church is $700,000 budget.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously audit probably not feasible. So what do you do?
There are three levels that a CPA can actually do your work for you. One is compilation. That's the lowest.
That's the basic level we just talked about.
The highest is the audit. And then there's also a review where they ask some standardized questions that cost a little bit more. It's not as extensive as an audit, but it is a good in-between stage. So solutions, you might go to your CPA and say—
Yeah, talk to your CPA, basically. Yeah,
and by the way, churches, and I hope I'm not offending anybody that's not a CPA out there, but there's a big difference between a CPA and a bookkeeper.
Oh.
A CPA is a certified public accountant. He or she has gone through a very rigorous process and has gone through testing, pretty tough testing as well, in order to prove that they understand and can do all the work that they do. It is not that much more difficult. It is not that much different, I should say, Jonathan, than passing a bar exam.
Okay.
It's very rigorous to pass the CPA exam.
Yeah.
I am not suggesting that a bookkeeper is inadequate, but a bookkeeper has not had
it's
that
just a
type
different
of,
level.
It's a different level. That bookkeeper may be just as competent, even though they haven't had the testing, but they haven't had the testing.
Yeah.
So for churches, just to let you know, if they have CPA after their name, that guarantees you that they've had extensive training.
It's kind of like the difference in hiring a teacher that has a bachelor's degree versus a professor that has a PhD.
Even more so,
I would say.
Because when you go through when you get a PhD, you produce your dissertation that shows, okay, I've done all this with the CPA. You have this massive amount of testing, unlike a dissertation, and you have to go through ongoing training to maintain your certification.
Okay, one final question on that. Is there a difference between, you know, the guy that does the taxes at the year end looking at the church books and somebody that works at a, you know, a corporate accounting firm and is a CPA for that looking at the books?
Depends on their back. I mean, this is truly,
it depends.
Someone can be, for example, a CFO and be a CPA in a company. Okay. Mm-hmm. That person may do taxes just fine. It just depends on what they have done. There are a lot of different kind of CPAs out there.
Okay.
So they may be helpful or they may not be. It depends on what they do.
Yeah.
So CPAs can do a wide berth of activities.
Yeah.
But if I am getting my books at least compiled and not reviewed, probably I would look at a CPA doing that more than just a bookkeeper. Just as kind of a review for our listeners, the reserve issue, budget, your reserve. Embezzlement issue, consider external, like Belay. We have information there. Audit, don't call it an audit unless it's audited, and check and see the credentials of that person who is doing the financials for you.
All right. Well, sounds good. Well, thanks again to Vanderblum and Search Group for sponsoring today's podcast. They are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblum and Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
A lot of good show notes here. Information from Belay. Also in the show notes, you'll see the information about our other podcast that is now going on a regular basis, Revitalize and Replant with
Tom Rainer.
And join us over there. So we're currently at the pace of 4 podcasts a week. After the first of the year, we'll be at 3. We'll be doing 1 at Revitalize and Replant. We'll be continue to do 2 a week here at Rainer on Leadership.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, a lot of good stuff, a lot of information out there.
Thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.